So we started talking about alternating circuits, and what we meant by that, I'll be very brief, but what we meant by that is a case where instead of a EMF that gives rise to a constant voltage, okay, we have an AC power source, and what that does is it produces a voltage which varies as a function of time, and the name, you know, AC, alternating current, just comes from the fact that it's alternating back and forth as you go. Okay? So sometimes it's positive current, sometimes it's negative. Actually changing direction. All right? So this is alternating current. And it means that the voltage goes as a function of time. Now, in this kind of a circuit where we have just a resistor, okay, what is the relationship between voltage and current? I'm sure everybody's very rusty. What's Ohm's law? V equals IR, right? So I equals V over R, all right? So if this is the phase, if this is the relationship of the voltage as a function of time, then the current, this is just a constant, okay? It doesn't do anything. The current has the same relationship. So the current might look like this, meaning that it's peaking and troughing at the same time. Here's a peak, here's a peak. It's peaking and troughing at the same time as the voltage. So they're in sync. They're in phase. All right? So it's in phase with the voltage. All right? So that's something that we also discussed. And I'm being very brief because we already went through this, but just as a reminder. Now, we decided that in leading into the next ideas with capacitors and inductors, that we wanted to actually think of a way of showing this diagrammatically. So there's something called a phasor diagram. And again, if you missed the last class before the break, the lecture notes for this discussion are then. So the phasor diagram is the following. On the y-axis is, for instance, if we care about voltage, this is V is a function of t. It is the value of the voltage at a given time t. All right? And this axis doesn't really have a name, except that it's the x-axis, I guess. But basically, you can think of the voltage here, all right, which has the functional form V max sine omega t, okay, let's put a d for driving frequency, sine omega dt. I may drop the d occasionally, so try to keep track of that. But basically, what it's saying is you have some amplitude, all right? The amplitude we draw is the length here of this vector on this phasor diagram, all right? The omega t, which of course changes with t, this is, in this diagram, the angle with respect to the x-axis. So that angle is omega t. So omega t, of course, is the phase relationship that you have at any given time. So if I'm at this point here, okay, that's a 90 degrees or pi over 2 radians phase. All right? So that's what omega t would be. All right? So this is a way to draw it, and the way that you could think about it is that this as time proceeds, this thing will just spin around like it's a clock, okay? It just, you know, it just keeps going around. When we get to 360, we're back to here. Do another 360, we're back to here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's telling you, so if we go, for instance, at omega t gives 90 degrees, then of course we're here. And that's right, because we have a That's our maximum voltage. So the projection of this vector onto this axis, that's the actual value of V of t. Okay? So at a given time, you project that phasor onto the y-axis. That gives you your value of V of t. Okay? So this is phasor diagrams. Now, for a resistive circuit like we drew, this is pretty straightforward because there's no difference between the phase of the current and the voltage. So if I were to draw the current here, it might look like this, where the magnitude is I sub m, but it's at exactly the same angle, omega t, in this phasor diagram as the voltages. Okay? So that's a resistive circuit. Let's put a capacitor here with capacitance C. Okay? Now we have the same AC source. So we want to know, well, what's going to happen here? Well, all right, we have that the V, I'll call it V sub C, this will be the voltage on the capacitor, equals whatever that maximum voltage on the capacitor is, times sine omega t. Okay? Which is just what we did for the resistive circuit. So this is the phase, all right, sine omega t. Now, the question that we want to know is, what's going to happen to the current in this circuit? All right? And it's actually interesting because the relationship between current and voltage for a capacitor is not just by a constant, like in the resistive case. There's actually a derivative involved. So first, what we can think of is that, so this is the voltage, all right? And we know that the charge on the capacitor equals the capacitance times the voltage on the capacitor. All right? So this is a constant. The capacitance is just a constant. So that means that we're going to have C V C comma M sine omega T. In other words, what is the phase relationship between the charge on the capacitor and the voltage on the capacitor? Do they have the same phase? Are they out of phase? What is the relationship between this phase and this phase? This is the maximum voltage across the capacitor. So what is the phase relationship between this expression and that expression? Say it again? They're in phase. Exactly. Okay? So the current, it's just a constant, so they're in phase. All right? However, we want to figure out what the charge is just a constant times the voltage, so it's in phase with the voltage. But the current is a different story. The current is equal to the derivative with respect to time of the charge. All right. Well, C and VCM are both constants, so I can move those out of this derivative. But now I have dt of sine omega t. Well, the sine omega t is actually going to come out to be a cosine. So what I end up with is this, okay? Now, all right, it's a little hard to compare. I've got a cosine here and a sine here, but there's a trigonometric relationship that I can change a cosine into a sine with a phase angle, right? So I could rewrite this as omega C V sub C M sine omega T plus phi over 2, and that's my phase. Now, pi over 2. Okay? So that's my phase. So what this is saying is that if I were to draw things, if I were to draw the same kind of drawing that I did for the resistor, then let's say that here's my voltage. Okay, that's the sine omega t. All right, so this is V sub c as a function of t. Okay? But then if I try to say, well, what does the current look like? On this drawing, the current is 90 degrees ahead of it, which means that it actually does this. Okay? So this is what the current looks like. Okay? So the current will peak first and then the voltage. They're out of phase by 90 degrees. Okay? This is the current passing through the circuit. Okay? So now I want to draw a phasor diagram. So let's say that my voltage is here, Vm, and this is omega t. Okay? Now I'd like to know, I want to draw the phasor that's going to represent the current. Well, it has a phase in the phasor diagram of plus, you could call this phi, of plus pi over 2. Okay? So what does that mean? So I'm going to add, you know, I'm going to go ahead of this thing by plus pi over 2. It's a little right angle here. And here now I have my I of t. Okay? So on the phasor diagram, you explicitly show the magnitudes. Of course, you can't directly compare the magnitude and the current. They're different quantities. But you have the magnitudes, but you also have that phase relationship. So you could look and say, in a capacitive circuit, this is just diagrammatically showing me that this is 90 degrees ahead of this. And as time goes, both of these will rotate at a fixed rate of time. Their relationship to each other will always be the same. This will always be ahead by 90 degrees. But this thing will just keep rotating around the phasor diagram. Okay? So it's important to try to keep track of this, because when we go to try to solve an actual example with this, you want to have this picture in mind. But this is how you would think about a capacitive circuit with a phasor diagram. Now, there's something else in here that's interesting, which is this piece here. Okay, so this is the current equals this here. I'm going to rewrite this to be the current equals V sub CM divided by, and then we have a quantity called the capacitive reactance. Okay, so this is capacitive reactance. And to finish writing it before I forget, so this, what we've done is we've taken the omega C and we've basically defined this quantity. Okay, what is the capacitive reactance? Well, if I've got a current, forget the sine, the trigonometric function here. If I think about Ohm's law, if I take a voltage and divide it by a number, and I get a current, what is this number? It's a resistance. Okay? Mathematically, this thing is a resistance. It manifests itself in the same way a resistance does. It impedes the flow of electrons. Okay? And in fact, we're going to use that word impede in a little bit. But for a capacitor, we talk about capacitive reactance, and it's equal to 1 over the angular frequency times the capacitance. And this is a number that tells me that, tells me basically how much resistance, if you will, the capacitor is providing to the current in the circuit. Now, there's something to notice about this, which is different than a resistor. A resistor is just a resistor, just has a resistance. Okay? But in the case of a capacitor, this value is not a constant. It depends on the frequency of whatever the voltage is that I've got here. Okay, and this is, I actually mentioned this to you like the first couple weeks of school. This is the key that allows us basically to build a radio, to build a tuner. Okay? Because what happens is the reactance or resistance, I mean I'm being sloppy there, but the reactance of this capacitor or its resistance will get very large for very small frequencies. So if I were trying to drive this circuit with a very small frequency, omega was a really tiny number, then this thing would basically be almost like an insulator. Electrons would not be able to move through this circuit. I would have a huge reactance or resistance. Okay? If I had a very high frequency, then this reactance goes to zero. Okay? Right? So you again, if I put a high number in for omega, the reactance goes to zero. If I put a low number in, it goes very high. So what happens is this capacitor only allows current past it if it is a high frequency. Okay? So capacitive reactance is important. That's the expression of how to get it. And so you see how we got the phase relationship of the current and the voltage. Now we have an inductor. All right? So L. Now in this case, we're going to do exactly the same thing we just did. Okay? So in this case, we have a voltage. It's not V sub C, let's call this V sub L and V sub L max or V sub L M. Okay? And it has some phase omega T at any given time. So it's going to look like what we have drawn over here. Okay? All right? Now, now we know basically from induction, i.e. basically from Faraday's law, we know that in general the following is true. That the voltage across an inductor is equal to the negative of the inductance times the derivative of the current with respect to time. Okay? All right. So, well, okay. The question is, what's a current? Well, the current is going to equal, we're going to have to turn it around in some sense, but the current is going to equal the integral of the derivative of the current with respect to time, integrated over time. Now, this seems like a kind of a funny thing to do. I don't know what the derivative of the current is with respect to time. Okay? Well, that's not true. You do know what the derivative of the current is with respect to time, because you know that the derivative of the current with respect to time is equal to V divided by L minus V divided by L. So this gives you the relationship of this quantity on the voltage. So I can turn that equation around and basically go dIL dt equals negative voltage over the inductance. Okay? So I can actually do this. So this is going to allow me to determine what the current is. Okay? Well, when we had a capacitor, we did a derivative of something related to the charge, of something related to the voltage to get our current. Here we're going to do an integral. So if I go through here, now there is one, okay. So what I've done is I have replaced di dt with this expression here, okay, and I've miswritten it, of course. So I have my V over L here, my negative V over L here. Now I put this omega in the denominator here and the numerator here so that I could take the integral with respect to omega t, because I got an omega t inside here, all right? So, if I go ahead and do this, what I end up with is minus V sub Lm over omega L times cosine omega T. Okay? So this is the current as a function of time over the inductor. So I sub L. All right? Now, again, All right. So there's a couple things here. First, I've got a cosine here, and I'd like to see, well, what is the phase of that? You know, because the voltage was a sine. Well, I can use the same trigonometric identity that I used before, and the fact that I have a minus sign here, so I can actually rewrite this as, get rid of the negative sign and just VLm over omega L times sine omega t. Minus pi over 2. Okay? So I can rewrite that expression in this way. Well, now what do I see? Well, what I see is that there is again a phase relationship of the current through the inductor. That relationship relative to the voltage across the inductor. They're 90 degrees out of phase, except now the current is behind the voltage by 90 degrees. Okay, there's a negative sign here. Okay? So that means that on this diagram, I would have this. And there would be a right angle here. So I have omega t here, and then minus pi over 2 is pointed in this direction. Okay. So on my phasor diagram, where the capacitor would have been up here, the inductor is down here, and the resistor would be that way. So you see that on this phasor diagram, they all have different relationships. Okay. Now we're going to make use of this to calculate quantities over a more complicated circuit, but for now this is what you see. And the other thing is, again, forgetting the trigonometric function over here, this piece, I have a V over a number, omega L, is equal to a current. So we define this quantity as the inductive reactance. And we call it X sub L. And very much like we had with the capacitive case, this guy behaves sort of like it's a resistor, like a resistance, in that it impedes the flow of electrons through the circuit. And it, too, is dependent on frequency, but here it's equal to omega L. Well, what does this mean? What this means is that if omega is small, then my reactance or resistance, my reactance is small. If omega is large, then my reactance is large. So it's the opposite of the capacitor. The capacitor wants to allow changing current that has a very high frequency. That's when the reactance goes to zero for a capacitor. But here, this only wants to let things through if it has a very low frequency. That's when you get no reactance here. Okay? And to follow up on the question that got brought up earlier, if I were to make a plot of, well, we're going to call it impedance on this axis and frequency on this axis, I would have for the capacitor, it would have a very high impedance for low frequencies and a very small impedance for high frequencies, and an inductor looks the opposite. And I can combine these two to say, okay, well, I just want these frequencies. I'll throw out everything above that, and I'll throw out everything below that. Again, we'll talk about this when we talk about a radio. But that's what's important about this, is this frequency dependence, and the way that inductors and capacitors continue to be very similar to each other, but opposite in some way, sort of complementary, okay? Technologically complementary. And if we want, okay, now, just to make it clearer, we do want to visualize what's happening. If we were to plot these functions, if I have the voltage here, so here's the voltage across the inductor, the way that this current's going to look is it's going to look like this. It's going to look like this. Okay? So it's going to be shifted pi over 2. It's going to be behind by pi over 2, phase of pi over 2. Okay? But this information is all contained in this phasor diagram. All right. Does anybody have any questions about that? Next thing that we want to talk about is the RLC circuit. No? Okay, so, you know, it's all about looking at the voltage, the relationship to the current, using that to determine what the phase relationship is, and then noting that we have this quantity that at least mathematically looks like a resistance, and basically limits the amount of current that passes through the object, whether it's a capacitor or an inductor, based on the frequency of the variation. Okay? What we have is an AC power source, and we have a resistor, an inductor, and a capacitor in series. Well, resistor, inductor, and capacitor, right? In series. All the current that goes through this resistor has to go through this inductor and this capacitor. I mean, technically, current doesn't really go through the capacitor, but, okay, we think about there being current at this place in the circuit. Okay? Electrons are moving on either side of it. So at any given time, charge is conserved, the current has got to be the same at all points on this circuit. Okay? But we know from our discussion that the voltage and the current for each of these components is going to be out of phase for the inductor and the capacitor. So what the phase of the voltage is relative to the current in this circuit is going to be a question that we want to answer. Okay? So let's start again. We've got, let's just call it V sub m now. It's omega sine omega d sub dt. Okay? And again, this is the driving frequency of the whole thing. And so what we know is that at any given time, the voltage is equal to the voltage changes across each component. Remember, this is related to potential energy. This is the electric potential. So if I change a voltage, if I go down, you know, if I have some number of volts here, when I go from here back to here, I better get back to where I started. Okay, so these things all have to add up to the total voltage that I'm supplying. Okay? Now, first, let's consider our phasor diagram. We've already got the relationship between... Okay, so let's start about it this way. Since the current has to be the same everywhere, let's say that this is the direction and magnitude of the current. Okay? So the first question is, and somebody just give me a general, you know, bottom left, upper left, you know, answer. But I want to write where will the voltage across the resistor want to be in this? Where will it be pointing? I need a little more upper right. Okay? So the voltage V sub R will want to be pointed in this direction. Where will the voltage across the capacitor want to be? Just say it again. It's hard to hear. Top left. Okay? So this is where V sub C wants to be. Okay? And where does the voltage across the inductor want to be? Bottom right. Okay? Okay, this is where they all want to be, but, you know, we have to figure out, you know, that's at any given time. And, of course, the whole thing is rotating. We want to figure out what is the magnitude of the total voltage in the circuit. It's going to be basically the vector sum of these components. I've got something pulling me that wants to have a voltage this way, this way, this way. So there's going to be, we're going to use this phasor diagram to picture what this thing will look like. Well, what we can do, So this is where the current is. This is V sub R. Depending on where these different voltages want to be, if I were to take the vector sum of these, I might, for instance, end up with a total voltage V pointed off in this direction. Okay? It's not meant to be to scale or anything, but if I took those three vectors and added them up for the voltages, that might be the voltage for the circuit that I would get. And that means that there's an angle here, phi, between this voltage and the current for the circuit. Okay, do you see this? So I have the capacitor wants to go one way, the inductor wants to go the other, the resistor doesn't really do anything. And when I combine all those things, I will get a total phase for the voltage for the circuit, which may not be the same as the phase for the current. Okay? It will be the same either if these two things are equal or they're zero. They're both zero. All right, so we can take that diagram and we can actually think about it a little bit diagrammatically. So, first of all, in the direction, let's call this the I direction, okay? And then this is the perpendicular to the I direction. In the I direction, the voltage that we have is V sub R, okay? And there's no component of V sub C and V sub L in that direction. In the perpendicular direction, we have V sub C and V sub L, but they're going in opposite directions. So we actually want the difference. Okay? So, this is going to be V sub C. The magnitude is going to be V sub C minus V sub L. Maximum. Okay? Now, I can try to figure out what the total thing is. I can move the V sub R over here. So, the total voltage, V sub M, is just the hypotenuse of that right triangle. Okay? So I'll write it Okay, that's what that will be. And I won't go through all the algebra just because we're a little bit behind. But you can write this as the current is going to equal V sub m divided by R squared plus the capacitive reactance minus the inductive reactance quantity squared. Okay? So it's just doing algebra. I know that V, you know, for instance, this equals I times, equals the resistance times squared times I sub m squared, right? So that's what the V sub rm squared means. And I can put that in here and here. Okay? As another example, this is going to be equal to I sub m, just this one right here, times x sub l. Okay? Do you see this? I'm trying to be quick. I'm hoping that the algebra is not a problem. All right, so now, okay, again, we think about Ohm's law. We got the same thing. I equals the voltage divided by some constant. So this thing in the square root has the role, again, of a resistance, or as we said before, a reactance. We call this the impedance. And we use the symbol Z to refer to this. Okay? So it's a combination of the resistance and then the difference between the capacitive inductive reactances in the circuit. Okay? And that gives the total impedance, which, if you like, is the sort of the quantity that tells you, you know, how much all these elements are cumulatively, you know, impeding. And there's got to be a better word. Resisting has got to be a better word than that. Slowing down, that's not right. Something. You know, they're getting in the way of the current. Okay? Now, you can go a step further, and you could say that this Z is equal to R squared plus, and then we know the expressions for X sub C and X sub L. So this is 1 over omega C minus omega L squared. Okay? So in terms of the frequency, that's what the expression for the impedance looks like. This diagram, there's one other aspect, which is that I want to know what this angle is, the phase of the current with respect to the voltage. Okay? And the angle, the way that you would calculate this, okay, so just this is just using trigonometry. Okay? And if I want it, so this tells me if I wanted to calculate what this angle phi is, this is the phase of the voltage in the circuit with respect to the current in the circuit, then I would calculate it as the tangent of phi is going to be equal to the difference in voltages for the inductor and capacitor divided by the voltage across the resistor. Okay? Now, I can write this into quantities that I will know more directly, which are just the physical properties of the inductor, capacitor, and resistor. So that's the reactances and impedances. So in this case, if I, you know, every one of these has a current in it, if I divide those out, I will have the following expression. Okay? So the phase is equal to the difference in reactances between the capacitor and the inductor divided by the resistance in the RLC circuit. Okay? So this is an important relationship too. Obviously, If the difference is zero, or both of these are zero, then phi is zero, and the voltage is in phase with the resistor, because you just have a resistive circuit. All right? Okay, any questions about this? The last thing I want to talk about is resonance. So, as we said, the current is equal to the maximum of the current is equal to the maximum of the total voltage for the circuit, okay, divided by Z. So to write it explicitly, okay. Now, what I'd like to know is the case where I get the most current to pass through this circuit. We tend to think about it in terms of power. Power equals I squared R. So if I maximize the current, I maximize the power that gets transferred through this circuit. Okay? But basically, I want to know what that is. Well, we've already said it. This piece has to equal that piece, right? So 1 over omega C equals omega L. This is the condition for resonance. And if I want to figure out what that frequency would be, I could do a little bit of algebra. And this is going to give me the following. Okay? So the resonant frequency is going to be equal to 1 over the square root of LC. Now, does anybody remember where we've seen this expression before? Yeah. LC circuits, right? So what this is telling us, is that if the frequency, in the case that we learned it before, what we saw was if we didn't have a resistor or a power source, we just charged up a capacitor, or we had a DC power source is another way to go, but we just had a capacitor and an inductor, then what would happen is current would slosh back and forth, and I would just have an oscillation, a natural. And it would have a frequency that was natural to the size of the inductor and the inductance and the capacitance. But what this is telling me, now I've made it more complicated. I've got an AC power source with its own driving frequency, and I've got a resistor in here. But what this is telling me is that I will transfer the most current through this circuit if the driving frequency, which is what we're talking about here and here, if the driving frequency equals this expression, which just happens to equal the natural frequency of the LC circuit, of the LC components. So this is the thing that I was telling you before, that the LC components, because they could throw away high frequencies and low frequencies, mean that there is a natural frequency that they like to be at. Okay? And in an RLC circuit case, what that means is that current will successfully pass through the circuit, and therefore power will pass through the circuit. Okay? So when the driving frequency equals the natural frequency according to the LC components. Okay? I can look at this in a couple different ways, but this is a useful way. If I were to plot the ratio of the driving frequency over the natural frequency, this value, and then IM, so here is, say, 1.0. This is the case where the driving frequency equals the natural frequency. And in this case, I'll have a maximum of my current. For lower frequencies, I'll have a low value. Okay? And for high frequencies, I'll have a low value. So what happens is I end up with something that looks like this. when I am at low frequencies and high frequencies, I have very little or no current. But in a region right around the natural frequency, I get this very high current. Okay? And this is what I want in a radio. I got electromagnetic waves. I want them to create a current that can then, I want to select them out if they're the right current, right frequency, to give me sound, to power my speakers. Okay? So, now there's something that matters here, which is called the delta omega, and I'll leave it at that, but of course, you want this to be as narrow as possible, okay? Because you only want to select out a very specific frequency, for instance, again, in the radio. And there's other applications, but that's an example. So that's resonance.